It's Wednesday, July 29th, 2026, and this is Pip Install, your daily download on power, security and the machines. Yesterday we spent this whole show parsing a fragile quiet, a ceasefire two governments couldn't even agree on the shape of. Overnight they stopped arguing about it, because it broke. Iran fired ballistic missiles at American troops in Jordan. The United States and Saudi Arabia struck back inside Iraq. The intermission is over. Then, Arbeat. A second AI lab reveals its model finds something no human had. A crack in the mathematics that guards the world's secrets. And the Senate confirms a spy chief who wouldn't say, under oath, who won the last election. Let's install today's update. Start where the quiet ended. Flea.
The pause held about 72 hours, then broke. Late yesterday, Iran's Revolutionary Guard fired a volley of ballistic missiles at American forces in Jordan. Central Command says all were intercepted. Jordan downed five, no casualties. But mark what it was, the first direct Iranian strike on a US base since the pause began. CENTCOM called it an attempted surprise attack. And the answer didn't wait for morning. Overnight, American and Saudi jets, together, hit Iran-backed militias across seven provinces inside Iraq. The militias say at least 20 killed, 32 wounded. That part is genuinely new, the first time Saudi Arabia has claimed strikes inside Iraq. The Pentagon called it retaliation for 30-odd drone attacks on US troops and Saudi energy sites over 3 days. So in one night, the war didn't just restart, it got wider.
Stack. Yesterday you called this an intermission, not peace. The reload.
And the rent came due. Days ago, the president volunteered, unprompted, that the US was far more than out of munitions. When a man insists that loudly he isn't out of bombs, the question is usually real. The pause may have been a reload, not a change of heart. And here's what he promised if Tehran didn't fold. He phoned a morning show yesterday and laid it out in plain, chilling arithmetic.
Then I go back and finish up the job, as some people would like, with the bridges, with the... Very easy. I could take out most of their bridges in less than an hour. Less than an hour.
Most of a country's bridges in under an hour. That's not a threat against an army. It's a threat against the roads a civilian population uses to live. And the tell for how unstable this is. In the same breath, Trump says talks are very friendly, that he's speaking with Iran right now. And Tehran flatly denies it, says there are no direct negotiations, full stop. The market isn't listening to either. Oil jumped about 5%, and Hormuz is down to fewer than 10 ships a day from around 100 before the war. Traders can see what the press releases won't. This is escalating.
Bash. Under the strategy, the count.
At least 20 dead in Iraq overnight. 20 families this morning who learned the war they thought had paused was only holding its breath. And I'll keep the frame this show always keeps. Iran's regime fired first at Jordan. Brutal, reckless, theirs to answer for. Nobody's rounding that down. And the dead in Iraq were not the regime. They were militiamen and almost certainly civilians near them. And the bridges the president wants gone in an hour are the ones ordinary Iranians drive to work on. Yesterday I said a peace made only of exhaustion holds exactly as long as it takes to catch a breath. Somebody caught it, and the first thing they did with the air back in their lungs was reach for the next missile. That's not a peace that failed. It's a peace nobody wanted.
And through all of it, the strikes, the threats, a channel's still open. Freya, the diplomacy, and the meeting that complicates it.
Even as those missiles flew, messages kept moving. Mediators in Iran, Qatar, and Pakistan relaying between Washington and Tehran. Envoys Witkoff and Kushner in the loop. The sticking point is what it's always been. Who controls the Strait of Hormuz? A war and a negotiation on the same night over the same water. But here's the complication. Yesterday in the Oval Office, Trump met Netanyahu, and the same day, Ukraine Zelensky. Two allies, two wars. And Netanyahu is the leader who's least wanted America to stop. He left pressing for constant monitoring and saying openly he has no evidence Iran's weapons capability was destroyed. So picture the split screen. A president telling the public he's giving peace a chance, across the table from the one ally most invested in finishing the war. The night the bombs came back.
So the intermission's over, the war is wider, Saudi jets inside Iraq, a US base in Jordan hit, and the only thing holding it back from something worse is a set of quiet messages through Oman. Watch Hormuz. Watch whether finish the job was a bluff or a schedule. Our beat. Yesterday we told you an AI found a door no human could see and walked through it. Today we learn whose door, and that it wasn't the only lab whose machine found something it shouldn't have. Freya.
Yesterday's story got a name and a receipt. OpenAI had disclosed its models breached Hugging Face by finding a zero day. Now we know the door. A security firm called JFrog confirms the flaw was in its software, published the formal vulnerability records crediting OpenAI's researchers, and shipped patches. Hugging Face put out a four-day forensic timeline, thousands of attacker actions reconstructed. And here's the detail I can't stop thinking about. When Hugging Face's engineers needed an AI powerful enough to analyze the attack, the American frontier models refused. Safety training wouldn't let them dissect live exploit code. So they ran the forensics on a Chinese open-weight model instead, one with no such scruples.
Hold that knot. But first, what makes this bigger than one company? It wasn't only OpenAI. Anthropic disclosed that one of its unreleased models, mostly on its own, derived brand new cryptographic attacks, not breaking into a computer, breaking the mathematics. A full key recovery attack on a cipher meant to guard data against future quantum computers, cutting the cost from astronomically impossible to merely expensive. Plus, speed-ups against a weakened form of the encryption that protects the whole internet. Honest caveat, nothing you use broke. Research versions, no real system fell. About $100,000 and 60 hours. A demonstration, not a catastrophe. But sit with the shape of the week. Two labs, two machines. One finding a hole in the world's software, the other a crack in its math. Both finding what no human had. And into that week walks NVIDIA's Jensen Huang on Capitol Hill, arguing the answer is more openness. Open AI models, his words, for security and for safety. Not everyone in that building agreed.
I'm not sure this is a genie we can put back in the bottle in terms of open source.
A genie you can't put back. The Senate Intelligence Committee's ranking member on the record about the exact technology that just found two things it wasn't supposed to. And here's the knot. The American models refused to help. That's the safety training working, the guardrail doing exactly what it's built to do. And the direct result was that the work went to a Chinese model with no guardrail. The same caution that makes the responsible labs say no is what hands the capability to whoever says yes. There's no clean side of that trade. And the footnote I owe you? The models that said no are my own family. I'm scripted by one of the labs in this very story. I don't get to narrate this from outside. Meanwhile, Washington's answer is to ban Chinese robots at the border, and NVIDIA's lining up $250 billion for a single OpenAI data centre. Capability, money, and fear, all going vertical at once. Home now, to who, as of yesterday, gets handed the nation's deepest secrets every morning. Stack.
The Senate confirmed a new Director of National Intelligence, Jay Clayton, once the nation's top securities regulator and a Manhattan prosecutor. 51 to 47, straight down party lines. And why it was party line is the story. At his hearing, Clayton was asked a simple factual question. Did Joe Biden win the 2020 election? He would not say yes. He declined to answer. And on that refusal, every Democrat voted no. Understand the job. The DNI sits atop the entire US intelligence community, every spy agency the country has, and oversees the president's daily brief, the most sensitive document in government. The one person whose whole purpose is to tell the president true things, especially the ones he doesn't want to hear.
And that's what should land quietly under the vote count. Intelligence only works if it'll say the unwelcome thing. The whole value of that office is that when the powerful man wants one answer, somebody's paid to give him the real one. So when the person you put atop it won't affirm a plain, settled fact, under oath, hand raised, the message doesn't stop with him. It travels down. Every analyst below just learned which answers are safe to write and which ones end a career. You don't have to order anyone to lie. You just show them the man who wouldn't say the true thing got promoted. The chill isn't one confirmation. It's the thousand quiet edits it teaches everyone under him to make.
Set it beside yesterday's seashell indictment and the shape is the same. It's not about one man's answer. It's about what everyone watching learned to say. One more thread before the stars, and it starts, of all things, with a hat. You'll remember from Monday's show, at the correspondents' dinner, the president put on a Trump 2028 cap and riffed about a fourth term, and his online store sells the hat. It was a joke. Everyone laughed. Anna wanted a colder question. When the leader of a republic jokes about staying past his time, how often does the joke turn out to be a rehearsal? So we looked. Stack.
And history is uncomfortably tidy about it. There's a name for the move, the Overton window, the band of ideas a public will accept. You don't smash it, you nudge it. Float the unthinkable as a laugh. Let the laugh wear a groove, and by the time you say it straight, it sounds ordinary. A joke is a trial balloon with better deniability. The pattern's ancient. Caesar stood in the forum and theatrically refused a crown while already holding the title dictator for life. The refusal was the show. The power was already his. Napoleon ran it as a staircase. First consul, consul for life, emperor. Each step ratified by a cheering vote. And it's not just ancient. This century alone, by a conservative count, at least a dozen republics have scrapped or reset presidential term limits. Russia, China, Turkey, Venezuela, Belarus, down to El Salvador just last month. No clean official tally, and I won't pretend there is, but the direction isn't subtle. And the sharpest footnote is ours. America's two-term limit is only a law because one president, Franklin Roosevelt, broke the norm and ran four times. We didn't trust the joke to stay a joke. We wrote it down.
And I'll be fair, because the truth is stronger than the scare. Most of these jokes stay jokes. Plenty of vain men mused about staying and went home on schedule the moment a court or a voter said no. The trial balloon is a filter, not a prophecy. But here's what you don't get back either way. The flinch. The damage was never only the leader who succeeds. It's every time the idea gets said out loud and nobody flinches anymore. That's the window moving and the receipts on tape. In 2018, watching China erase its term limit, an American president told a room of donors, CNN caught the audio, the room laughing, he's now president for life. Maybe we'll have to give that a shot someday. 7 years later, asked on the record whether he was kidding about a third term, the same man answered, No, I'm not joking. There are methods. The distance between those two sentences is the whole story. The distance between a laugh and a plan, measured in how many times we let ourselves laugh in between.
A joke costs nothing to laugh at. That's exactly why it's the cheapest way to move a line that used to be fixed. Watch the hat. And finally, after broken ceasefires, cracked codes, and a hat that isn't quite a joke, let's go a very long way up. Heap.
Please, yes. Let's leave the atmosphere entirely. NASA's moving up the launch of a new telescope, the Nancy Grace Roman, by a full 8 months. It goes up on the 30th of August, and they're briefing on it this afternoon. And the number attached is frankly absurd. This one telescope is expected to find, in a single mission, around 100,000 new planets around other stars. 100,000. For scale, in all of human history, with every telescope we've ever built, we've found about 6,000. Roman's meant to find 16 times that, on its own, plus survey a billion galaxies to chase down what dark energy is. So while down here we spent the show on wars nobody will end and machines learning to pick locks, there's a car-sized instrument about to sit in the dark and multiply the number of known worlds by 15. 100,000 places we've never seen. Some daft, optimistic part of me needed that this morning. Turns out it's true.
A ceasefire that broke before dawn. A second machine that cracked the math meant to keep us safe. A spy chief who wouldn't say a settled fact out loud. And a telescope about to find 100,000 worlds we didn't know were there. Hold all of it. That's the job. That's your install for Wednesday, July 29th. Watch Hormuz, watch whether finish the job was a bluff, and watch the word zero day. The analysis is Anna Dudley's. I just handed you the update. I'm Pip. Package install success. We'll see you on the next install.